Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hi, this is Josh Marshall, and this is the Josh Marshall Podcast. It is 2 days after Election Day. It is November 5th, 2020. And we are getting, I think, the outlines of the story are coming into view now. We don't have a final result with the presidential, but I think everyone would agree it is, you know, much more likely than not that Joe Biden's going to be the next president of the United States. We don't know exactly the margin, but I think it will be the odds on are, you know, a healthy margin. It's looking like the Democrats will have, I guess, a net one seat Senate pickup so far. And very likely, I guess not 100% confirmed, that we'll have two runoff races in Georgia in January, which sets up a, I don't even know, you know.
It's like a double rainbow, double runoff for election.
Yeah, I mean,
nerds.
It's, you know, Georgia is not a small state, but man, they're going to have a hard time packing all the money that is going to be poured into that state over the next 2 months in this, because this is... if the Democrats won both of those races, they would control the Senate. They would control it because it's a 50-50 split, and Kamala Harris would provide the tie-breaking vote for the leadership and control and all that kind of stuff. That is, I'm not sure it's quite a long shot. It's a tough bill. It's going to be a real challenge, but I think it is... looking like more likely than not that Joe Biden will win Georgia. We certainly don't know that yet, but again, more likely than not. And it's going to be so close in either direction that it is sort of basically a tie in the sense of where Georgia is. So if it's a tie, you can't say winning a Senate race there is like impossible or aspirational. One of them isn't really an incumbent, just the sort of the placeholder. But the two senators are not terribly popular. So, you know, it's doable. It's not anything I would count on. My assumption is that Mitch McConnell will be the majority leader in January, which is bad, which really is a big negative. But you know what would be a bigger negative? If Donald Trump were sworn in again on January 20th, that would be a catastrophe. And it's pretty clearly not going to happen. So we don't know yet. I think it's possible that we'll get a call today. But we are recording this podcast a touch after noon on the East Coast. So we're going to kind of walk through what we've seen over the last 48 hours with my two colleagues, my two co-hosts, and we'll go from there. Before we get to that, remember that the Josh Marshall Podcast is sponsored by Grady's Cold Brew Iced Coffee. I was going to say, you have this 25% off deal through Election Day, but that's backwards in time now. So I guess that doesn't apply anymore, but you should still be buying Grady's Cold Brew Iced Coffee, the sponsor of the show. It's great stuff. We all drink it, and it's just great stuff. So you should order some. Go to Grady'sColdBrew.com and put in the promo code TPM. I'm sure you're going to get some discount. I can't even tell you exactly what it's going to be, but it's good stuff. So do that. That's our sponsor. And David, what do we got?
Josh. So, Kate, I thought maybe we could check in with you. The last time we spoke was about 1 a.m. on Wednesday, so kind of overnight on election night. We did not have a clear sense of where things were going. A lot was still up in the air. Basically, what we knew then was kind of what we had expected, that we would be in for kind of a long wait. So I just wanted to see, what's your What's your mental health state like, your anxiety level over the last couple of days? How are you doing?
Yeah, you know, as I was saying off air, don't eat, don't sleep. I just watch the vote totals. But yeah, I mean, the emotional roller coaster for Democrats over the past couple of days has really been night and day. I think Tuesday, even though people were prepared for, you know, that it would be a blue mirage in these early Sun Belt states, that the Democratic vote would be counted first and then the mail-in ballots, and then it would, you know, swing back to Election Day, but with Republicans. Having Florida come in not as close as the polls predicted, and then North Carolina on its heels, was kind of a double barrel blow for Democrats, especially because the concern being that if the polls were off there, who's to say they're not off everywhere? You know, and in some ways I had a very heavy 2016 reverberations, which I think Democrats have a lot of scar tissue around to begin with. So, you know, that's kind of where we were then. I would say even that night, the fact that we had Fox News go out on that limb and call Arizona way before everybody else. So there was some concern around that, concern that maybe they were going to have to retract that call, that they'd made it too soon. But if you did put credence in the call, that was kind of a sign of where the race has gone since then, which is Trump's chances without Arizona were always way worse than if he had won it. And that having that tally in Biden's column was, you know, huge. But I think people were nervous because Fox was the only one who had called it. We later had the AP call, but we're still at the point where CNN and NBC haven't called it, even now Thursday afternoon. So that's kind of where we were headed into Wednesday. And then that was the moment of the big sigh of relief for Democrats when Biden won Wisconsin and then Michigan. And, you know, as David had mentioned just off air, it looks like Michigan in particular is aiming to not even be that close when all is said and done. But when he had those states and then he had Arizona, that is just a much easier, calmer path to 270. And things get much more uphill from Trump since then. So, you know, and then from that point, we've kind of had Pennsylvania's coming in. It's still coming in, but looking very promising for Biden. The campaign's been very bullish about their chances there. We have Nevada. It's counting so painfully, slowly, but that looks good for Biden, too.
I will just say, right as we were talking, they just got another batch in Nevada, and it seems like there's some significant Biden padding there now.
Okay.
So that wasn't too up in the air, but it seems like a lot less up in the air as of a few moments ago.
Okay. Yeah. Because I mean, if Biden's got Arizona, Nevada blocked, I mean, that's 270. So wouldn't even need Pennsylvania, even though that's looking good for him as well. So yeah, in the past 48 hours, we've gone from a place where I think Democrats were pretty suicidal, thinking we had another 2016 on our hands, to things are looking quite good for Biden, quite bad for Trump. And the big concern that we've talked about that on this pod for months, that Trump would, you know, try to hijack a losing election, throw it to the courts. Obviously, that threat is still present, but what we've seen so far is just so much more clownish and cartoonish than what I personally expected. You know, I thought they were kind of, we'd read all these reports about their beefing up their legal departments, they're bringing in the top guns, you know, they were casting aspersions about mail-in ballots, about all this kind of stuff to kind of prepare the way to make this big legal challenge. And a lot of what we've seen so far is not even necessarily centered on the votes themselves, though we do have a couple things in that vein. But there's been a lot of lawsuits about, you know, ballot watchers not being allowed in the room and other just silly stuff like that, which, okay, you know, so say the Trump campaign wins, what, they get their guys in there and then they just keep counting the ballots, you know, that is not going to be the lawsuit that swings the election for Trump. So I think, yeah, to sum that all up, where we are now Thursday afternoon is more of a posture of kind of waiting for the final state to fall into Biden's column than where we were Tuesday, which was just racked with panic that the polls were off, nothing we believed was true, we're headed for another Trump upset.
It does have, you know, just major flashbacks to 2018, too, when we had James Carville early in the night on MSNBC, I believe, saying it's not a blue wave. I think we had Van Jones on CNN calling it a heartbreaking night. And then we just had to wait for the votes to be counted. And it ended up being a pretty strong Democratic showing, you know, Democrats taking the majority in the House. And it's seeming like it's feeling like it's playing out in a similar way, too. If we have, you know, if Biden gets Nevada, Arizona holds, Pennsylvania's looking solid, maybe even Georgia. That's not even, you know, that's a better night than I think a lot of Democrats were, I don't know, feeling about on Tuesday. So maybe, Josh, let me ask you, you know, you're a very close watcher of the polls. I know you have kind of, you're obsessed with that. You've been having some interesting, I don't know, discussions or conversations on Twitter about, do we need to fix polling? Is there some existential crisis in polling? Obviously, you know, the ABC Washington Post poll showing Biden up 17 points in Wisconsin seems like an outlier here in hindsight. But kind of give us your global sense of, I don't know, where the polling industry stands. Do we need to just rethink it altogether? What's going on there?
Well, let me say one thing first about something Kate said, which was right on target, that you know, there was just this you know, kind of dead hand of 2016 looming over a lot of us. And I think what it was very reminiscent of is that a lot of us 2016, you say, wow, didn't come together in Florida, but you say, you know what, but we've got all these other states, so it's okay. So, cause we've got all these other states, and you just see them fall. And, you know, seeing, especially, I mean, and I haven't, you know, it doesn't really matter now to the top of the ticket results. I haven't gone back and looked everywhere, but the big story in 2016 was Democrats are actually getting their numbers in the Democratic areas, but Trump is bringing new people out in his areas, which in some ways was sort of the story in these other states. So you did have a sense of like, wow, we kind of thought like, okay, you lose one, that's not a big deal, but it was a premonition. And then, so it kind of seemed that way, right? Especially with this weird thing in Miami-Dade, where kind of like, you know, just a total, wasn't like the margin was down. It was like a different county or something. On the polling stuff, you know, it's hard to say because on the, you know, right now, I think the most likely outcome is 306 electoral votes for Joe Biden, which frankly, I would say is about, you know, if you asked me kind of like a week ago, I would say that's kind of like the median expectation, you know, wins Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, picks up Georgia, picks up, Arizona. We don't know all those things yet. I'm just saying I think they are the most likely outcome, with Georgia being the most uncertain. But you wouldn't say it was like tight. You wouldn't say it was a blowout. You know, you don't have Texas. You don't have, like, you know, even North Carolina, which I frankly thought was more likely than Florida. You don't have Florida, obviously. But it's funny because there's the whole conversation about polling, a lot of which tends to zero in on like Nate Silver and this weird psychodrama of everybody's love hate with Nate Silver, right? I've seen all these things like, there's going to be a reckoning for the pollsters. You can't mess it up twice in a row. It's so bad. And it gets sort of conflated with other kind of whininess about the Democratic Party, even though it has nothing to do with the Democratic Party. And I think this is what you're getting at, David, is sort of like, do we need to fix polling? Does polling, like, why does polling even matter? I mean, as you said, I'm totally obsessed with polling, but that's just because I have this totally irrational need to feel like I need to know how elections are going to turn out before they happen, which is purely like a hang up I have that has nothing to do with anything. And so, you know, and in some ways it really would be better. I mean, I was kind of thinking, I mean, Tuesday night was not pleasant. It was deeply unpleasant. I'll speak for myself. I suspect I'm speaking for a lot of other people. That was not fun. I was not expecting to be there again 4 years later. It was deeply unfun. But as it was happening, and especially before it got pretty dark for a while, I was thinking that this whole pandemic vote counting thing was kind of good in the sense that, well, I don't really know what's going to happen. You know, kind of going into this blind. And that is actually kind of in some ways better. You know, there is, you know, the people in the safe states don't vote in a lot of cases because their votes don't matter. Right? Or kind of like, I mean, so it's treated as, you know, we have to fix polling. But like, why? What does it really have to do with anything? There's some arguments, but basically, what does it have to do with anything? Sorry, Kate.
No, my big question on the polling front is, were the private polls that the campaigns were paying for as off as the public polls? Because, you know, if you're a campaign, that is pretty key to how you decide to allocate your resources,
absolutely.
Your personnel, what states you target. And the reason why I'm kind of saying I don't know is because if you look at how the Biden campaign did their campaign, it was from the first focused on flipping that Midwestern blue wall back. And they did a pretty incredible job of not getting distracted by the shiny objects that people were trying to push them to at the end of the campaign. Specifically, you know, when we were starting to see these very bullish projections in the Sun Belt, you had people saying, you need to be spending more time in Texas, you know, you need to be spending more time in Florida. And the Biden campaign would, you know, they sent down Kamala Harris on one day to go to the Rio Grande Valley and, you know, sent Obama down and things like that. But on the whole, laser focused, especially on Pennsylvania in the last few days of the race, which ended up, that is pretty much how it's looking, you know, with the exceptions of we do have Arizona and Georgia. But, you know, the crux of this race is where the crux of the 2016 race is, which is Michigan, Wisconsin, Pennsylvania. So that makes me wonder, was the Biden campaign looking at better data than the rest of us were? You know, did they see that Florida was not tilting Biden the way that the public polling was, and that helped them just channel all their energy into those states? You know, I don't know, but that's something that I'd be interested to know when all is said and done.
I will say this, and David, I think you were in this, you were running this briefing with me. We talked to Guy Cecil. I've totally lost track of time. When was that even? Was it Friday?
That was last Thursday.
Last Thursday. A week ago, right? Okay.
Or Friday. Something like that.
And what he said, and I suspect their polling would be comparable, you know, similar methodologies and stuff, probably comparable to Biden's polling. The key thing he said is that it was much more consistent. They weren't seeing these, like, you know, oh, it's a blowout in October and now it's tightening. That theirs were pretty consistent. And again, for the presidential, not clear to me that it was meaningfully wrong at all, frankly. I mean, if I think what Florida's like 3 percentage points in the final total. I don't know exactly where it is now. But if they thought it was, like, let's say the Biden campaign thought they were up 2, that's just within what can happen, right? That's not off. That's not a disaster. So it's really not clear to me. And even in the public polling, you do kind of get, I mean, in Florida, there does seem to be an issue. I think you have it's not just a diverse state. You've got a lot of different communities, you know, kind of ethnic, demographic. And by that, I mean sort of these transplant retirement communities in Florida. You have a bunch of different ethnic groups under the Hispanic label. It's not just, you know, Cubans versus everybody else. It's, you know, Puerto Ricans, you know, a bunch of, you know, Venezuela, a lot of different stuff going on. And the pollsters seem to have just a hard time getting a sense of, you know, what's representative or not. So Florida, I think, was a bit off, certainly from the public polls. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, you know, if it turns out that they were seeing, like, look, we're up 3 or 4 in Pennsylvania, I'm not sure that's going to be off. The House is a little like, what, you know, it does seem, yes, like the Democrats are going to lose, you know, kind of shed a significant number of their gains from 2018. And that is, you know, that's a question. I don't know exactly, you know, I have less of a sense of, you know, were the internal polls in that, in those campaigns off exactly? Certainly it was off in that I don't think, I certainly wasn't expecting, I don't think other people were expecting that they were going to lose, you know, lose seats. They thought they were going to, I think they thought they were going to gain the, you know, a dozen, maybe as many as 20 seats. So that's a bit off. We've got to figure out why that is. But again, David, to your point, it really is like 2018. You have people saying like, oh, we got to rethink everything. And then kind of 3 days out with, like, you know, your lifespan shortened by 3 years, you're kind of like, well, that's kind of what we thought was going to happen.
Yeah. And I think with the polling specifically, we do kind of have to wait for these states to shake out because, you know, Michigan is looking like Biden's going to win it pretty handily now. That's not exactly how it was looking though when the votes first started coming in. So, you know, the polls are telling us what, are predicting what the ultimate end result of that vote will be, not what the vote's going to be on election day, you know? So even though we were maybe worried about Michigan or maybe worried about Wisconsin, when all is said and done, those races might not end up being very close. And that is what was reflected in the polls. But, you know, one of my big beefs with the polls right now is what happened in the Senate to Democrats, you know, best chance races. And particularly in North Carolina, where you had Cal Cunningham running against Tom Tillis, and in Maine, where Sarah Gideon was facing off against Susan Collins, because in both of those races, but specifically North Carolina, Cunningham had been leading for months. Like, you have to go all the way back to the summer to find a poll where Tillis was leading. And I'm not saying it was a huge double-digit lead, but it was, you know, mid-low single digits for months and months and months and months, including when he had his stupid sexting scandal. And after that, it just seemed very baked in. And that is a lot how Maine was as well. Gideon had a pretty clear edge for multiple months going into this, and Maine specifically doesn't even look like it's going to be close.
Yeah, you know? And she had the ranked choice voting in her back pocket, that kind of, like, she didn't need to win outright. She probably could have lost by, you know, 2 or 3 percentage points and then still you know, done it easily with ranked choice voting. So that's kind of a stunner. And I mean, again, everything that, I mean, you got to hand it to Susan Collins, man. I mean, damn.
I know.
I mean, it sucks, but you got to hand it to her.
Especially in Maine, because in North Carolina, maybe you make the argument Trump ran ahead of where we thought he was going to run. Because, you know, I think people, I myself included, expected North Carolina to be kind of where Georgia is now. And it seems to be a bit redder than that. So maybe that's your argument. Trump ran ahead of his benchmarks. Most people vote straight ticket. Ergo, Tillis ran ahead of his benchmarks. But in Maine, Biden won by 9 points. It wasn't close. So we had some, you know, ticket splitting going on, or some hardcore Collins constituency that we didn't know about before this.
Well, I mean, she's been there for a long time. And, you know, her thing, her shtick has always been, you know, I'm not really a Republican. You're not voting for a Republican. You're voting for Susan Collins. And I wasn't watching that closely, but my sense is she closed hard on all the cool stuff I've brought to Maine. You know, I don't know if it's like a big lobster processing factory or what exactly she was bragging about, but, you know, all the cool stuff she did for Maine. And I think certainly the premise was that she had just shown how she was a faithful backer of the corruption and horror show of Trumpism, and that that pitch was not going to work anymore. And it did. It worked. Yeah. And man, I think, as you say, that's the Tillis thing. It's a reddish state, you know. I'm not sure it's red, but it certainly has, like, you know, it's red curious. Let's put it that way, right? So, you know, Trump won, and, you know, kind of Tillis is Trump's guy. It's very disappointing. It does show the polls kind of missed something, but in a way, not that surprising. But the Collins thing, wow, it still worked.
Yeah, and what's interesting about Collins to me, which just kind of goes to a point you just made, is similar to how Mitch McConnell keeps getting elected in Kentucky. It's like both of these senators are especially reviled by Democrats. Every year that they're up, there's Collins only recently, but McConnell for a while, target on their back. That is someone Democrats hate and want to take out. And then Collins this time, McConnell for like the 8 million times he's been reelected, just keeps making their campaign about, hey, here's what I've done for you, state, here, Kentucky, here, Maine. I've been like bringing back the goods to you again and again. And that ultimately keeps seeming to trump these people's national profile, which has, you know, incurred so much hatred from the Democratic side.
Well, you know, the weird thing, too, about McConnell is that he is not popular in Kentucky.
Right.
He's really not liked at all by anybody. He pulls it out. He's mm-hmm. supported. But when you look at, you know, kind of like approval and stuff, he's really unpopular. No one likes him, but they support him. And in that way, Collins is kind of the inverse of that. You have a lot of, you know, in Maine, kind of like, oh, you know, hate Trump, hate those Republicans, but Collins, our person, you know, she brought us the lobster processing plant, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. And on this topic, one more beef to get out of my system is that a lot of people online have been pissed that there was so much money spent on McGrath in Kentucky, similar to Harrison in South Carolina, where Lindsey Graham, you know, pretty much sailed to reelection. And I've seen a lot of kind of ha 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 tweets about the mountains of money that have been set on fire. And that drives me nuts, because what do you want? Do you want Democrats to only compete in blue states? Because the way the Senate is structured, Democrats will never, ever, ever have a majority again if that's what they're doing. And the only way for us to make inroads into these states that are traditionally red or getting bluer, like South Carolina, the only way to do that is to pump in money and build some infrastructure and set up some grassroots funding.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, I saw there's this woman I know who's a Republican operative, and she had this tweet saying, like, you know, such a tragedy. All that money. Just think of the charities it could have gone to.
Oh, my God.
The philanthropies. And it was just burned up. And you know, Graham kind of tried to get into this. Oh, never so much money been lost. You know, give me a break. Give me a break. He was desperate and he was terrified. And yeah, he won. You know, props. He won. But the thing is, I mean, I don't know, but I would be shocked if there are many people who gave money to Jamie Harrison who are like, oh man, you sold me down the river, man. Like, how could you do that to me? You lost. I want my money back. I think people knew those were the. I mean, there's a sort of argument of the McGrath. I think we knew that McGrath was really tough. Harrison, I think, had more of a, I mean, sort of in retrospect, hard to say, having a chance, you know, blah, 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 blah. But I think a lot of Democrats wanted to leave nothing on the field. It was super important. And I suspect the vast majority of people who gave $25, $200 are probably like, I'm glad you gave it all you got. I don't think Democrats are sad about it.
Yeah. And just the idea that, you know, you're going to shift a state like South Carolina blue in one go, it seems pretty remote to me. And I think there's evidence to suggest that kind of the battering ram of going at Georgia again and again, and especially with, you know, people like Stacey Abrams devoting all this organizational effort and money, is the reason why it's a swing state now.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. It's not wasted money.
Right.
Totally agree.
You've made the point a lot, Josh, right, that kind of politics and campaigns and elections are sort of a muscle that you build up over time, right? It doesn't happen overnight, and it's not like one loss is, you know, a doomsday scenario for either party, or, you know, and that it takes time. And I think you're exactly right, Kate, that Georgia is a good example of that. But I think that's about all the time we have. We will probably be back once we know kind of more certainly what the results are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, remember, Grady's Cold Brew Iced Coffee is the sponsor of the Josh Marshall Podcast. Order it. Use the promo code TPM. It's great stuff. And I can't even tell you what the discount will be, but I'm sure there's some discount. So go ahead and order
some
stuff.
We are very comfortable with ambiguity these days.
Yes,
so.
We have to. We're waiting for the... We don't know the numbers yet. You just got to let it ride and
exactly.
Order your Grady's and just, you know, you have to wait for the results.
All right. Well, nice to talk to you guys.
All right. Talk to you guys soon.
Talk to you later.
Bye.